Welcome to the Corner of Film podcast. I'm Niall from Corner of Film, which is a film website where I write about film. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and best friend, Jack. Hello, Jack.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to anybody who's listening.
I thought you were going to do Good Morning, Vietnam.
No, I'll say that for a moment. Oh, thank you for the movie quote. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect. Oh,
you're welcome.
I'll cut this out so that it doesn't spoil the surprise.
Oh, I've got a good one. Don't you worry.
Oh, okay. Phew. Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm not too bad. We're both rocking a slightly tickly throat.
Yeah.
A little bit under the weather. And we're both sipping... well, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking tea, Jack. Nice...
What kind of tea? Yeah.
Oh, builder's tea.
Oh, like tea. Okay.
Yeah, like milky, sugary...
Goodness.
Just, yeah, potion.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Jack?
I am drinking knockoff Lemsip. Started off with a nice, healthy slice of lemon in boiling water, but it just tastes horrible. So I put loads of sugary Lemsip in it, and now I feel better.
Cool. You're living it up.
The thing is, though, you say living it up. It's currently, let's reveal what kind of time we're doing these. It's 8:30 in the evening. I will now be going to the toilet all night long from drinking this, so I'm kind of regretting it.
Nice. That's just age, though. I don't think it's the tea. I think it's the
28 going on 200, mate.
Yep. I do. Before we start, Jack, I actually have some. I was going to say it's exciting news. It's not exciting at all, but it's admin, we'll get it out of the way. Some of you might have noticed, Jack. You might have noticed. I didn't even talk to you about it. To be honest, I posted the podcast on a Saturday last time.
Yeah, I can't say I noticed.
No, it's just, you know, boring sort of real life reasons, but it's going to go out on a Saturday from now on. So every other Saturday there'll be a podcast, and then on the other Saturday there'll be a list, and they're the two things that take the most time. So I figured it cuts down on how much time I'm spending on it. And, you know, I like doing the lists, but I don't want to do too many or they'll get boring. You know, there's one's just gone out that I know you weren't overly happy about. Jack.
No, I wasn't actually.
Yeah. It was movie heroes who are actually kind of villains, and Qui-Gon Jinn was one of them, and Jack is not best pleased.
No.
About that. No. We won't talk about it.
Because that's a long discussion.
Yes, it is. But the next list that goes out, which is when the podcast goes out, it will be next weekend.
Yeah.
The next list is, I think, 8 movies that ended and then kept going. So,
okay,
you know, that's just something to look out for. But we've all, I'm sure one or two spring to mind where...
In a good way or a bad way?
Either or, really. I mean, it's, you know, there are certain ones that... I'm trying to think of an example.
Please, God, end.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like Lord of the Rings, just, you know, Return of the King. I love that film. It's excellent. But there's kind of about 4 places where you feel like it could be the end and it's just not. And then it just keeps going and going. It's not that it's bad. It's not that, you know, it's just at that point you're kind of ready for it to be finished and it's not.
Yeah, me 10 minutes into June.
Yeah.
Christ, that film did not end.
Well, it did end, Jack. It did.
Oh, yeah, true.
It absolutely did. That's slander, so...
I mean, it's not.
Yeah. But yeah, so keep your eyes peeled for that. That'll be next Saturday.
Okay.
So you know, it's a fun one. It's a fun one. Obviously, spoilers for the films that are in it, but... That none of them are new, so that's fine.
That's all right.
Yeah, I can't think of a good way to segue in. But Jack, should we just jump into our first and juiciest and sort of only segment, Weekly Watches?
Yeah, so actually, I am... am I one up on you, or are we about level?
I think we worked out its level because I'd forgotten one of the things I'd watched. But
okay, well, I have watched extremely, extremely highbrow cinema this week.
Yeah.
So I watched Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, great film!
Scary Movies 1, 2, and 3. And I actually finally got to see the Batman. Have we talked about it on the podcast yet? No, we wouldn't have done.
Well, I talked about it. Yeah, I think we could probably talk spoilers now. I think it's been out long enough. Yeah. So we'll touch on that. Definitely. Well,
yeah, we won't go too in depth because again, we could talk all day about Batman. But
well, yeah. But go on then. So Hot Tub Time Machine, Jack. What was it? Your first time? Have you seen it before?
Oh no, I've seen it plenty of times. I was just in the mood for a light-hearted comedy. I think is my favorite genre of film.
Yeah,
I feel like it's one of those genres even. It just does everything, and if you can do drama well in a comedy, it really it hits. Do you know what I mean? Like if you get a real poignant moment, I just think comedy can do it all. Having said that, Hot Tub Time Machine is not one of those films. it does what it needs to do. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I have seen Hot Tub Time Machine 2 a couple of times. Not as good, but still enjoyable. Yeah.
See, I've seen, I think I've only seen both of them each once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember them that well. I remember enjoying them generally, but yeah. It's Rob Corddry, Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson, yeah.
Is it John Cusack? And
it is John Cusack, yeah.
Who's the fourth guy? I know there's a fourth guy, a younger guy, and I can't think.
He's in The Office as well. He plays the same kind of character in like all the films he's in. He plays that dorky kind of goofy kind of guy. I can't think of his name though.
Duke is his name.
I just googled him, and that is not the most flattering picture that's come up straight away.
The one on his Wikipedia page is
someone's done him dirty there. He's almost 40.
I quite like him. Is he really?
Oh my god!
Oh well,
fair play.
Do you know what? I do really like him. Like he's as great. An actor, I know what you mean. He does always kind of play the same person, but yeah I quite like him. I've not seen anything where I've gone, not him.
No.
Like he, you know what you're getting, but
he's good at what he does.
Yeah, so, I mean, just looking, Hot Tub Time Machine didn't get bad reviews. It was generally favourable.
Well, what year was it? It was like what, mid-2000s? So it was that kind of era where those films were kind of well received.
No, Jack, it was 2010.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, actually, yeah, looking back at it, it does seem of that era. Chevy Chase was in it, which I completely forgot. And also a very young, actually not very young, but a Sebastian Stan who is younger than I remembered.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not.
Pre-teeth job.
Oh.
Got his old teeth.
Oh.
Not those Hollywood gnashes that we love.
I have no idea what to say to that. But
what teeth job? Oh, dear.
Yeah. That's a good shout. I mean, that's one that I keep scrolling past on... I think it's on Disney Plus and on Prime at the moment.
I think I watched it on Disney Plus. No.
But I keep scrolling past it and thinking, I should watch that again.
I definitely should.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Scary Movie?
Or I do.
Should we kind of...
Very briefly.
Yeah,
so,
go on then.
Scary Movie, for our generation, is one of those films like American Pie, which we all have very fond memories of. It was a go-to at like sleepovers because it was kind of naughty. It was kind of like, do you know what I mean? Like it was one of those films.
Yeah, it was sort of seminal, even though it didn't really deserve to be.
Oh, yeah. Do you not reckon? Anyway, I always thought that Scary Movie 2 was my favourite because that was the one I watched a lot, you know, with Hansen. Egg my strong hand. Obviously, we watched them in order. I'm not a madman. Didn't just go crazy. Started with one. Absolutely loved it. It's really funny. Like, I was laughing a lot. And then we moved on to two. And I was laughing. I thought it was funny. But actually, I was like, this isn't as good as the first one.
No, I think, I mean, again, like, I've not watched these in at least probably about 8-9 years, if not longer. Yeah. So my judgment's maybe a little bit skewed, but I'm pretty sure I remember thinking 1 and 2 were pretty good.
Yep.
Kind of stupid. Like, they're stupid films, they are.
But, yeah, they're dumb, yeah.
You know, again, you kind of know what you're getting, and it is that whole spoof thing. Spoof, and yeah. they made the spoof genre kind of, I mean, they've got a lot to answer for in that sense, but they were the first ones to do it that really made it work. Well, I mean, that's a really weird claim to make. They did not invent spoof.
But, no, but they, you know, yeah.
Yeah, the idea of sort of riffing on a whole kind of,
yeah,
not just genre, but it's specific films and sort of taking aspects of,
yeah, there's some really clever
number
bits
of films. And the first one is a kind of mostly a send up of Scream, am I right?
Correct.
And the second one is mostly
like Clue.
Is it House and Clue and House on Haunted Hill? It's yeah. a kind of yeah. And then I vaguely remember there being one that was sort of a thing about, like, I think it was the fourth one with Charlie Sheen. It was all about, like, signs and, like, aliens.
That was 3.
And... was that 3?
Yeah, so okay. We watched 3, and I was really struggling. I was like, this is just not good. And it turns out I looked into, you know, went on IMDb and had a look.
Yeah.
3 onwards, it was a completely different director, whereas the first two were done by the same bloke. So direction is definitely a big thing. However, they have one of the funniest gags in the whole series, in which the police officer, every time she appears on screen, her hat gets bigger.
Oh right, yeah,
that was like genuinely really funny. Like that did make me laugh quite a bit.
Now you said it, I remember that.
Yeah,
that is quite funny.
So I don't really know if I have it in me to carry on. I think there's like 6 or 5, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure there's 5. I don't know if there's 6, but yeah, I don't know. You should press through. And
I might soldier on.
I might try and do all of them in one go.
You will actually have a brain aneurysm.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not.
Be not, but yeah.
It's. I can sit through some stuff, so I just feel like that true. Would be fun to just to do. But yeah, no, you're right. I think they do kind of... they get gradually worse as they go on, definitely. But yeah. The second one definitely has some good,
it is still good
moments. But I felt like the second one had a bit more kind of gross out humor than the first. And like,
yeah, definitely.
Although I think quality wise overall, I think probably much of a muchness, really.
Yeah. Well, that was me.
No, it wasn't Batman. We can finally talk, because there were a few things that, you know, we don't need to add too much.
No, we have touched on quite a bit.
To what? I mean, I don't personally have anything really to add, but I don't know if you remember the kind of specific things I was saying, but go on, generally, give me your thoughts.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, I really did. And I kind of want to watch it a second time at the before it leaves the cinemas, because to be honest, there's not really a lot else out at the moment that would I'd want to go for. But yeah, I really enjoyed it, and Robert Pattinson smashed it. I knew he would. Really, really enjoyed his take on Batman. I thought it was very cool. I am slightly in love with Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah, she's great. Isn't
she's
she?
So like, good.
She's really good in it.
Yeah, she's just super cool. Like, she nailed that.
Yeah, she definitely did. And I think that's the kind of the general consensus, is she was a very good Catwoman, and a lot of people, I think, are saying that they would consider her the best. And
yeah, I can see that.
You know, I just think it's the most kind of well-rounded in terms of the way it's written as well as the way it's acted. Yeah. So I'll tell you what, we'll give just a little spoiler warning here.
Yeah,
and then
one.
People can jump ahead if they're, you know, hoping to avoid hearing about it. But how did you feel about that Joker?
I don't really know how to feel about that, to be honest.
Well, see, this is the thing, because I didn't want to spoil it for you, so we've literally not talked about it until now.
No.
But that was the only part of the film that I didn't like.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it. I was kind of like,
It's, do you know, it's not about, what's his name, Barry... is it Keegan? Barry Keegan.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, him.
That's the one.
I think he's got the potential to be a great Joker, but I have written about this a couple of times about how Matt Reeves kind of, he's trying to go for this grounded like world. Yeah. And the Joker that he needs is basically the one that Heath Ledger already played.
Yeah, I agree.
So he's kind of got a bit of an impossible task ahead of him because he can't pull off comic accurate in the way that, I mean, Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix have both done it now in two different ways. And I can't see a third way to capture that and make it feel new. And from that scene, I just felt like it was, they were trying to be a little bit more kind of comic accurate, but that's going to hurt the tone overall. And
conflicting.
Yeah. And also, I just felt like that scene was just shoehorned in for
definitely,
like franchise potential when the rest of the film was very much a kind of standalone thing. Like there was obviously a bigger world there and it was setting up a bigger world, but it didn't beat you over the head with it. Whereas that scene was very like,
yeah, it did seem a bit like dangle it in front of everyone and be like, ooh, Joker.
Yeah. It was very, it felt very Marvel, which is personally, I don't really like that. I just think it's like cheap marketing, you know, stunt, isn't it? It's a, let's put a scene in with this character and then everyone will talk about it and everyone will be excited for a sequel and they're, you know, but
yep.
I felt like it was such a good film on its own merit that that was just a bit cheap. And, you know,
And I will add one last thing. As someone who rides a motorbike, God, there was,
I know what you're going to say.
What, am I in a bad way or a good way?
Oh, no, maybe you're not going to say the thing.
No.
I'll make my point after.
Okay,
God,
I was just going to say, it made me really miss riding a motorbike. So it was stunning.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those scenes, especially at the end when they kind of do the Fast and Furious bit where they kind of drift off.
Do you know, it makes perfect logical sense for Batman to ride a motorcycle around.
It does.
And sort of, he's kind of passing unnoticed because he's got a helmet on. He, you know.
Yeah, it's a costume in itself.
It makes sense. And, you know, he can get around quicker and so on and so on. Like, stylistically as well, I thought it was a really nice way of showing he's like a loner and, you know. However, I have written a piece for Screen Rant about this. I don't think it's actually been published yet. It's written. It'll be up at some
point.
Give us
the gist.
But basically, what I thought at the end is that bit right at the end, there's a couple of bits throughout because I watched the second time I went to see it again.
Yeah.
And the second time I was looking out for it because I'd already written this piece at that point. But that final scene, it's really obvious that his cape would get tangled in his wheel.
Yeah.
Like it's like where it's raining and he's got his cape, he's in his full Batman gear and he's got his cape trailing behind him in the wind and it's like raining.
Yeah.
His cape would get wet. It would touch on the wet wheel and he would be dragged off of his bike and it would just, and you know, there's one bit where he's like slung it over to the side and it's dangling under his bike.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that's just so pointlessly dangerous.
You know, as cool as Batman is, I still think his costume is so lame. I just don't like capes. I think they're like a bit naff.
It's, I think, to be fair, I think, I mean, we're kind of getting off topic as we always
as
do.
Always.
But I think with Batman, the cape is kind of an important part.
It's a weapon, I suppose.
As well, it, stylistically, like it's very bat-like. Whereas,
for
example, like Superman, I don't think the cape is necessary.
Nah, it's a very old school comic design though, isn't it? That was very much the, we'll give all of our superheroes capes.
Yeah. But,
idiots.
Yeah, I just, you know, I get what you mean. But
back on track, let's roll. What have you watched?
Yeah,
Christ, that was me going on for like 20 minutes.
Okay, well, actually, that's just reminded me, I have actually watched six things.
Oh.
So, but, but one of them was Batman again, so I don't think that counts.
That does not count.
No, so five. I'm just going to like list them off. I've written reviews for all but one of them, and the one that I haven't, I will probably write one for. So at some point, there'll be a review on the site, but some of these aren't going up for a couple of weeks yet. So, you know. I watched The Adam Project, the new Netflix thing.
Yep.
I watched Moon, the Duncan Jones, 2009, I think.
Yeah.
I watched Pixels.
Hey.
Adam Sandler sci-fi comedy. I watched Mute, which is like a Netflix sci-fi thing. And I watched Fantasy Island, which is a...
The island sounds familiar.
It's on Netflix. It's a like a sort of horror reimagining of the old TV show.
Okay.
And it's a weird one. So I'll sort of talk about each of them a little bit, I guess. The Adam Project.
Yes.
Is for anyone who missed it, it was, I think, quite well marketed generally, like on social media and stuff. Ryan Reynolds, it's a time travel kind of sci-fi action sort of comedy. It's not, there's comedy in it, but it's not a comedy. But
all of Ryan Reynolds.
I was going to say, it's Ryan Reynolds, yeah. You know. It was good, generally speaking. Like, I quite like time travel films. I love sci-fi. In that respect, it was quite solid. Sci-fi had a decent story. The idea is he is from the year 2050, and he travels back in time to the present day and meets his younger self, like himself as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the present day, his child self is grieving his dad, who died about a year before.
Okay.
And then him and his child self travel back a few years to speak to their dad, and they kind of have to reconcile this, you know, sci-fi plot with their own like grief and stuff. And it's all very, there's kind of a deeper story to it, but to be honest, there's not really anything deep about it. Like, it's emotional in places, but it's not got like real themes it explores and stuff. It's just generally like he's time traveling and he's kind of coming to terms with his own past and stuff, and that's about it. That said, it's a decent film. Like, it is fun.
Okay.
I don't know how much you know about it really, Jack, but it was directed by Sean Levy. You know, the guy, he did Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds recently.
Yeah, I really did not like Free Guy.
No, I wasn't overly keen, but it felt very similar. It was lots of, I mean, not as many, because Free Guy's premise was very like, you know, almost like Ready Player One.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of thing, but there were a lot of little nods to kind of other like properties and stuff, and there was a little Deadpool joke in there. And since that's come out, Sean Levy has been confirmed as a director for Deadpool 3, which basically means that they're going to keep working together, which I think their styles, Ryan Reynolds' style and Sean Levy's style, really kind of complement each other.
Yeah.
But I don't personally think it's okay. It's entertaining, but it's nothing, you know, it just lets Ryan Reynolds be Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, and make the films he wants.
Yeah. And you know what? He is good at it. And like, even in this film, when I was thinking, oh, he's just being himself, like he's talking fast, he's being sarcastic. He's being quite charming, but he's also being, you know, a little bit insufferable. that's just what he does.
Yeah.
But even in amongst that, there was some real acting. Like, he is a really good actor. I saw a while back, I saw a film with him in Buried. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, but I know it.
Yeah, and it's like 90 minutes, and it's just Ryan Reynolds in a coffin, like buried alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole film.
Yeah, you've got to be able to act to pull that off.
It's, you know, and he is a good actor, and you do see that in The Adam Project, but it's sort of in between all this kind of stuff that just feels a bit, it's all flash, but no real substance, you know?
Yeah. Modern Hollywood.
It's worth watching though. Definitely. It's one you don't have to think too hard about. You can just sort of put it on and have an evening and not have to sort of concentrate too much on it. So, speaking of films like that, Pixels.
Yes.
So what year was that? 2015, I think.
Is it really? Christ. I thought it was older than that, but that kind of maybe.
No, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, 2015. You are.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I thought it was older than that too, actually. But I wrote on my review a couple of days ago, so still in my head. If you've not seen it, basically, it's a film about, it's Adam Sandler, and he is, I mean, how would you describe it, Jack? He's like a video game champion as a kid, or second place. and then aliens invade Earth in the sort of form of 80s video game characters.
Is he the president?
No, Kevin James is the president.
Yeah, I've only seen it a few times, and I'm talking quite a while ago, but yeah.
Yeah, it's stupid. Like, it's a dumb film, but there's a lot about it that I think is really good. And when you, like, look at the reviews and stuff, it just got absolutely railed by critics. Like, people hate it. Like, critics especially.
Like, critics despise Adam Sandler, apart from Uncut Gems, and now I feel like they're going to be all over him.
Yeah, but do you know what? I think critical analysis misses the point of his films, of most of his films.
I agree.
Because, you know, part of the genius of what he does in his comedies that everyone thinks are stupid is he makes something that's sort of, it's comforting, there is an element of, like, lowest common denominator humor, which it works. People like it.
He's well aware of that as well.
Yeah, and he leans into it. And, you know, basically what you're seeing is you're seeing a man who is giving his friends work, who is making millions and millions of dollars, and he's making you laugh in the process. I don't really see what the problem is. And the thing about Pixels is, like, I was looking at the reviews after I watched it, and I just fundamentally disagreed with all of them.
Yeah, I think they missed the mark.
Well, it all just says, like, there was one that said the visuals were really poor, and I thought,
no,
really? Like, what film are you watching? Because to me, all the way through, I was thinking, I really like the way they've used these, you know, 8-bit characters, and they've made them look realistic, and they've kind of, you know, I thought it looked really good, personally. I also found it genuinely funny in places. Josh Gad in particular, I found really funny.
Yeah, he was good.
He was doing the thing he normally does where he's quite weird and sort of inappropriate, and that's funny. And, you know, Adam Sandler, I can never not like. It's just, there's something about him that it just instantly makes me feel good about what I'm watching. Yeah. Kevin James, again, like, I like Kevin James. He's a stupid, funny man.
You're a big King of Queens fan, though. Like, I always remember you really enjoying that show.
Yeah, I love it. It's a great sitcom. It's again, it's a stupid sitcom, but that's part of its charm. And, you know, not everything has to be cerebral, especially sci-fi. Like, I love sci-fi, like, completely. It doesn't all have to be high concept, though. You know, it just doesn't. And that's why I like Pixels, because it's got a really easy to digest sci-fi kind of premise that it's built around nostalgia, and it just works. Like, it's not anything groundbreaking, but it's fun, and you can watch it for a couple of hours and you're entertained, and then you don't ever have to think about it again if you don't want. And that's the genius of it. So, you know, critics are wrong, and it's Chris Columbus as well. Did you know that?
Was it actually? I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, you can sort of, when you watch it thinking, oh, it's Chris Columbus, you kind of sort of see and hear all these little things, and you think, oh, that's,
wicked. I'll have to rewatch that, and then, yeah, I love Chris Columbus.
Yeah, no, it's, I'd only seen it once before, so I was rewatching it for the second time, and I just thought, like, I didn't realise the first time I watched it, I liked it, but I didn't, you know. And I was just rewatching it thinking, oh, this is a nice film. Like, it's just nice.
Yeah, nice.
Fantasy Island, I'm not going to say much about. I only watched it last night at the time of recording, so it's fresh in my mind.
Is it as bad as everyone's saying? It has got horrific ratings.
Oh, do you know what? I didn't even look at those, so I don't even know how bad this is. But it was entertaining in a sense of, you know, so I think for context, it's probably worth mentioning, because we have a lot of listeners in America, that we don't get Fantasy Island here, especially, like, Jack and I are children of the 90s. So Fantasy Island's kind of before our time anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't aware.
No, and I was aware of it, but I'd never seen it. And I have never, it's never been something that, like, I've seen on TV and just skipped past either. It's just not got a presence here at all. So, you know, I wasn't familiar with the kind of source material, really. And the idea is, these guests go to this tropical island that grants them a fantasy, and then you know, their fantasies normally play out not quite as they would have imagined. So that, to me, lends itself quite well to horror because,
yeah, it's a good,
you know,
miss there.
Yeah. It was stupid. It was a dumb film. There's lots of like little nods to the TV show and like catchphrases and stuff being thrown in there, as it felt a bit gimmicky in that sense, but the story was okay. Like, I, by the end of it, I was invested enough that I wanted to know how it ended.
Okay,
like,
that's good though.
I couldn't have just switched it off and walked away. So it obviously did something right.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it was quite generic, I think would be the only word I can think to describe it with. Yeah. And the other two films I watched are, they're actually linked. So Moon I watched a couple of weeks ago now. And that is Sam Rockwell. It's so Duncan Jones who directed it. It was his first,
yeah, his like, first one.
Yeah. I didn't actually make the connection in my head until after. He's the guy who wrote and directed the Warcraft movie, which...
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, that got bad reviews, but I didn't mind it. It was okay.
And also, he's David Bowie's son.
Yes, I didn't realise that until after, when I watched Mute, which is one of his more recent films. And there was a couple of Bowie songs in the film, and I was like, oh, okay, is that significant in some way? And I looked at him like,
oh, there we go.
I see. And yeah, so Moon is about, for anyone who's not seen it, it's about a man played by Sam Rockwell who is basically, he's on a mission on the moon, and he is in charge of keeping this automated like facility running smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
He's completely alone on the moon, and he's got a 3-year mission, and it's sort of coming to an end, and he's looking forward to getting home and seeing his wife and his daughter. And this is all at the start, so it's not a spoiler if you've not seen this, you know, 12, 13 year old film, which I know you haven't, Jack.
Yeah, thank you.
it's not, don't worry, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But there's an accident at the start, and then he wakes up and he sort of feels like maybe something's not right. And then he goes out to inspect the site of this accident, and he finds himself unconscious, right, but still alive. And he brings himself back to the base. And that's kind of where the story goes. Like, that's where it starts, yeah, basically. It's a really good, just sort of general sci-fi film. There's an interesting dynamic there, but it also, you're very aware that you're watching Sam Rockwell acting against himself.
Oh, really?
Like, he's bouncing off of himself, but in a good way. Like, it looks great. You're not sort of looking at it going, oh, yeah, there's obviously just one actor there. It, you know, it looks good, but every sort of scene, I was just thinking, wow, that's really impressive that he's so, you know, he's got like a back and forth with himself going, and it's just done really well, which, you know, obviously the acting is a key part, but you know, the direction and the editing as well it's impressive. And I also think, just as a little side note about Moon, Jack, is you would love it because the sort of set design and the kind of, you know, aesthetic of it is very retro.
Nice.
But it looks great. Even, you know, over a decade later, it still looks good. And for like external shots of like the moon, apparently he just used all models.
Oh,
so
yes, I love miniatures so much.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Wicked.
So you would enjoy that.
No, I just had a quick look. That would be classed as an indie movie. The budget for that was only $5 million.
I was gonna say that it was on a small budget as well.
That's
great.
I mean, I know people will be like $5 million, but $5 million in in movie making world is like
terms,
a penny.
Yeah, definitely. No, really good film. I would definitely recommend it to you, Jack, because it's right up your alley.
I should
alley.
Dust it off the shelf. The films I own but have not watched.
And then sort of following on from that, so this is a film, Mute, is a film that it's on Netflix. It's a Netflix, like it was made for Netflix. And it's one that I've sort of been scrolling past for a long time, thinking, yeah, I should watch that at some point. And I had no idea that the two were related at all.
Was it supposed to be obvious, though, or was it kind of like a subtle?
No, it was subtle. So it's Duncan Jones described it as a spiritual sequel.
A spiritual sequel.
Yeah, but it is technically it is a sequel because it there's a very brief scene that in the background of like a, you know, diner scene or whatever, there's a TV on. And on the TV, there is a sort of epilogue to the events of Moon.
Right.
And that's basically it. That and the fact that Lunar Industries is sort of a company that Sam Rockwell's character works for in Moon. And you see their kind of branded stuff in the Mutes world, basically. And that's kind of the entire link between the two. But it's about a Mute bartender who his girlfriend goes missing and he kind of confronts the seedy criminal underworld of Berlin to kind of get her back or find her, like set in the near future. It's very, very sort of Blade Runner, like inspired, but it, you know, it, again, it's one that got panned on the grounds of it was derivative. And again, I just didn't agree with that at all. I won't go into it too much, Jack, because I think you would probably quite like this film. It's Alexander Skarsgård, and he, you know, he's playing a mute bartender. So he spends the entire film not talking.
Ooh.
Which is a challenge in itself.
Really,
you've got Paul Rudd playing a sort of back alley black market surgeon.
Nice, I like the sound of that.
And it's just it's not perfect. It's kind of pacing wise, there's a few bits where I'm thinking what's going
slow.
On. Yeah, the kind of first half was a little bit jagged, sort of, yeah, a little bit confused. But then the kind of last, the like final act, I felt like really kind of picked up. And again, I was quite invested and I couldn't have just walked away from
no.
it. So, yeah. But I was sort of, that kind of got me thinking, actually. I mean, that's what I've watched. But that got me thinking about the idea of sort of stealth sequels and, you know, that whole idea of this film is linked to that film, but it's not.
Not exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's not obvious. You don't have to have seen that, but, you know. And I kind of wanted to know your thoughts on it, really, Jack, on that sort of the pros and cons of how that works and the merits of it, maybe. Yeah.
I feel like with all kind of sequels, especially at the moment, I feel like if there's a real love for it and it, you know, the filmmaker actually really wants to make and has a vision for a sequel rather than 20 years later, like, oh, we've made a sequel, we've rebooted it, where it's clearly just cashing in on like what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
But if there's some real, yeah, heart there and it deserves a sequel, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing that I thought with Moon and Mute in particular, I thought was really nice because Moon came out, what, 13 years ago? I mean, it was Mute, I think, was 2018, so it was 9 years between them. Moon did quite well. I think, if I remember rightly, at the time of release, it did all right. It was kind of a sort of a big deal, but yeah, people were talking about it. But I mean, it's not the sort of film that you would expect to get a sequel because it's a self-contained narrative, really. It doesn't entirely warrant a sequel.
No.
But because it sort of takes place on the moon, it feels very removed from a world that it does talk about.
Right.
So, you know, there is an interesting kind of idea in there. There's a much bigger world out there that you're not seeing. And that was something I also got a real sense of with you that kind of translated over, that there was a real sense of this is the world you're presented with right now because this is this character's world and that's the main character and that's what you're experiencing, but there's more going on and there's this, you know. And it didn't sort of, I mean, Duncan Jones, I believe he also wrote both films and possibly produced them as well, so
he was all in,
you know. Yeah, it was very much kind of his vision, and I really liked that sense of world building that it wasn't. Because I think what most kind of franchises do now, or just films in general, they do this thing where they set up a franchise, even knowing there might not be one.
Yeah.
Like, just for example, we were just talking about Free Guy, and every aspect of Free Guy made me feel like they were setting up a sequel, even though there was no indication that's what they were doing.
Yeah, it's one of those worlds, isn't it, where like any character could potentially have a spin-off. Is it so like, yeah.
And I like the idea that franchises are going to pop up that you don't necessarily, that you wouldn't necessarily link, or, you know, because I think that's more organic. That, you know, these stories aren't necessarily sort of intrinsically linked just because they take place in the same universe. Like another example that just comes to mind is Cloverfield.
Yeah.
So you've got Cloverfield, you've got 10 Cloverfield Lane, and you've got the Cloverfield Paradox, which I've not seen either. I've seen 10 Cloverfield Lane and Cloverfield.
I loved 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, it was excellent. And the thing is, if Cloverfield hadn't been in the name, you would not believe it was
had no idea. Like you said, if it wasn't called 10 Cloverfield Lane, I would not have put two and two together.
No, and until its kind of final couple of scenes where it sort of made it a bit clearer what was going on. But it's a story that doesn't necessarily fit in with Cloverfield. You don't have to watch Cloverfield to understand what's going on in 10 Cloverfield Lane, even when they do start linking a little bit more.
Yeah.
I like that idea as a sort of, when you have that in your franchise, or you would sort of, I mean, I don't know that I'd necessarily describe like Mute and Moon as a franchise. It's not that sort of connection. But that's sort of the beauty of it, I think.
It doesn't scream franchise.
And that's, I think, a good thing. I despise the idea that everything needs to be linked to everything else. I just think it's just tired. I don't want to have to watch 20 films to understand this one.
It shouldn't have to be like that.
It just seems like most blockbusters are kind of going that way, in that they want franchises because it gets people to go and see it, regardless of quality. Yeah,
that's where the money is.
But, I mean, I was thinking about one other kind of example of that, I guess, that I know we sort of talked about, and you've said you've not seen a couple of these films, but it was Unbreakable and Split, and then Glass that came out afterwards. That Split wasn't marketed at all as a sequel to Unbreakable until, you know, it came out, and then Bruce Willis was in it at the end, and you realized it was occurring in the same world, and that was really genuinely exciting.
That's cool.
I just like it. It does work in some ways, but then, I mean, with that, they made Glass, and Glass was awful and sort of ruined it. But, you know, I like the idea, but I think it does hurt the films because that marketing angle just can't be used, you know?
Yeah, get you.
And I think sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Like with Mute, I think that really hurt the film because it's just becomes messy with stuff like that, because you're kind of, you're deliberately not using that built-in audience of people who watched the first film. So, you know, but I think it's admirable, personally. I think it's quite a nice touch.
Yeah, I can't really think of a whole lot of examples for that, really. I'm really racking my brain and I can't think of much.
No, it is a very sort of specific, like, idea, I guess. I'll tell you what, though. The other thing that I was thinking about with sequels is Pixels. I mean, I sort of mentioned this to you anyway already, but I felt like Pixels is a film that there's an easy sequel, in that, you know, it's all about these video game characters from the 80s. They could make a sequel where there's video game characters from the 90s that
And, with their kids, know, they could, just, you know, their kids' games, although that would kind of be like their kids are going back and playing Fortnite and stuff like that, which would be horrific.
Yeah, but I mean, I just think there's a kind of natural progression of that gimmick, in that you've got classic 80s video game characters. Why not grab some, like, you know, because the whole idea of that film is it's built around nostalgia for people who grew up playing those games. So you can make a sequel built around nostalgia for people who grew up
playing it goes on
the
and
next
on.
Generation of games. Yeah.
Very much. And very, very much like Wreck-It Ralph. However, Wreck-It Ralph 2, I really did not like at all. I thought it was not good.
Oh, I've not seen either the Wreck-It Ralph.
The first Wreck-It Ralph is really, it was cool. It did, it was very similar to Pixels, that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
But don't bother with Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Okay. I mean, it's when you've got kids, you're forced to watch every sequel.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. So you've not got any say. So enjoy Wreck-It Ralph 1 and 2.
Yeah. It's, do you know what the best example of that is the Cars.
Oh, mate, I do films. Not envy you for that.
Do you know what? Cars 1, decent film. Cars 2 is so bad that I've still not watched Cars 3, even though I've heard it's quite good.
Oh, dear. Yeah, the first Cars was all right. I didn't mind that.
It's, do you know what, though? And again, like, completely not at all what we were going for in the conversation here. It's gone, you know.
My bad.
But when, but when you're watching films with kids who are loving what you're watching, you do get a kind of vicarious enjoyment of it. So, you know, like I said, I think it was last week, I was talking about how we watched Sing and Sing 2. Yep. And I thought they were pretty good films. The animation was good, and the general kind of story and stuff, it worked. It was quite sweet. And, you know, but I think you enjoy it more because you're sitting watching it with someone who has no concept of what a good film is. And they just enjoy what they enjoy. And yeah, and there is just a really nice kind of thing about how much they love it, even when it's not particularly good.
Secondhand enjoyment is infectious.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean children especially, because they just laugh at everything.
Literally everything.
Yeah. So, you know, there's an element of that, I think, that sort of comes into play when but I think they know that. Studios know that when they make sequels to animated films. Yeah. Like Cars 2 was god awful. And it's like a, you know, they just know people are going to be stuck paying for it and watching it for years to come because kids like that film, so they're going to have to watch that.
Yep.
And it's, yeah. Yeah. So getting back on track a little bit, Jack, sequels, I guess the thing that I wanted to ask you is, are there any films that you think deserve a sequel that just haven't got one?
That is a good question. I'm trying to think of, I don't know, because most of the films that I love, I think I love because they're a cohesive piece of, you know, piece of art.
Like Hot Tub Time Machine and Scary Movie that didn't get any sequel.
Exactly that.
yeah.
Oh, I don't know. There's so many options that are probably screaming at me, but I can't think. Maybe are they going to do a second Simpsons movie?
Well, that's one they've talked about, it haven't they, for a long time. Yeah. It sort of seems a bit up in the air.
The Simpsons died really after the Simpsons movie for most people, and I think they could maybe redeem themselves with a second film if it's good.
Yeah, I think they could. I hope they do, but I also sort of hope they don't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the one for me that sort of always springs to mind is Man of Steel.
Okay, yeah, no, I've not watched Man of Steel, so I can't jump in with this one, but go on.
It's a tricky one for me because I like Superman as a character. Yep. And I like, you know, the stories that are there, but Man of Steel itself wasn't at all my favorite. Like, it just, to me, it didn't capture what Superman should be. It tried something new, and I like that. I like that, you know, they made an attempt to do something different, but it just didn't work. And that kind of had this knock-on effect that sort of ruined the DCEU because Superman's such a central character. Yeah. And they kind of made him a bit bad. Like, he was just this sort of weird, brooding, like, alien guy who, you know, it just didn't work in the way it should have. And it set up this dynamic because he's such a central figure in DC's kind of wider stories. Because they'd got him fundamentally wrong. Everything else kind of, there was this knock-on effect that, you know.
That's a shame.
And Henry Cavill is just such a great, he's a great actor. Like, he is a good actor.
He is good,
but what's great about him is he brings this real, like, kind of nerd reverence to everything he does.
Yeah, he's a fan of everything he does, really.
Yeah, and I feel like most things that he does, he kind of communicates that. You know, when you watch The Witcher, you just know that he was there like on set reading the books for the 15th time so that he knows exactly.
Having the best time.
You know. Yeah. And I just feel like his Superman could have been so much more than it was. And he got one film that wasn't a bad film. Like Man of Steel was not a bad film at all, but it just kind of didn't really get Superman right as a character. And then he got Batman versus Superman, which was an awful mm-hmm. film. Just, well, I say awful. It wasn't an awful film, but it got so many things again about Superman and Batman completely wrong.
That's a shame.
And then, yeah, and then Justice League just kind of just was just
nail in the coffin.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I've not actually seen Snyder's version, but I'm aware that it sort of supposedly saves the film. But it's not, to me, it's not about that. To me, Superman was just not done properly. And I think if he was to get a sequel there, I think Henry Cavill could be a much better Superman and a sort of
Shame, because if he had a fair shake and he got like a decent director behind it, or he was given the chance to, like you said, he's a good actor, to really make a great film, like he could have done one or two and then be done with it.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I blame for generally for the sort of failure? Yeah, it was a failure of Man of Steel. It just didn't really land. Pardon the pun. I sort of blame Christopher Nolan.
Why?
Because he produced it.
Oh, did he really?
He did, and so it was a Zack Snyder directed it, but him and Nolan kind of worked quite closely together on it. And the idea originally was that they kind of wanted, like the studio wanted to link Nolan's Batman films into Man of Steel. And Nolan was like, absolutely not, which, you know, fair enough. But then he did help make the film and he sort of advised on like how to capture the same tone, that sort of grounded kind of gritty, like realism.
Yeah.
That he tried to put into his Batman films. And that doesn't work for Superman. You can't, it just doesn't work. You can't, it's not.
I reckon he slightly, you know, sabotaged it then.
Not deliberately, but yeah, I think it was the studio that sabotaged it. I think they wanted something for it based on what Nolan had done with Batman that just wasn't compatible with the character. And so they kind of, yeah, but it was sort of what Nolan did with Batman in his trilogy. I think they were sort of like, oh, well, that worked. People liked that. Let's make a Superman film. And it, yeah. So that's kind of, I think my big one would be Man of Steel. I, off the top of my head, I can't.
No, I'm drawing blanks, which is crazy because there's, you know, so many good films that that do need them.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of like franchises that I feel like deserved a better shake. Like Hellboy. I'd love another Hellboy, but Ron Perlman's too old, yeah. And the David Harbour one they made was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't bother with that because
it's painful, like genuinely painful. And the saddest part is, I like David Harbour, and the presentation was good. It just didn't
deliver.
It was just poorly written, and yeah, that was a shame because I like Hellboy as a character and the stories that are there are excellent.
Very cool.
But just, you know, Ninja Turtles. I like the Ninja Turtles franchise.
You know, apparently those films were absolute hell to work on. Apparently everyone got done over dirty, like, and it was just a really awful production.
I mean, I don't know anything about that side.
Michael
of it,
Bay?
To be fair.
Yeah, there we go.
It is. And again, like, I just thought there was a sort of general, like, idea. I don't dislike Michael Bay's films at all. They're predictable, but that doesn't necessarily make them bad inherently.
No, that's true.
You know. Yeah, I think those are films that have a really bad reputation that I don't think's deserved. They could have done with a proper franchise, maybe. Percy Jackson, that was another one I was always disappointed that kind of they got two films
didn't,
and that was
didn't
it.
Didn't see it.
It was okay. It's well past the time when they could carry it on now.
Then.
I think they are making a kind of reboot for Disney Plus, a series. So
interesting.
You know, it's getting another chance, I guess. But yeah, there are lots, but
I've got one.
A lot of them are like, yeah, go on.
I think because The original was pretty damn good, but they tried to cram way too much into one film. They essentially did like three books in one film. But A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Yes, that is a good
one. If they'd drawn that out, drawn out sounds bad. If they'd taken their time and dedicated a film for each book, I don't know how many books there are. There's too many now, I think.
12. There are 12 books.
Is there really 12?
Oh, maybe 13, actually. But yeah,
God, I, as a kid, I only read, I think, the first four, but I absolutely loved them.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, I know what you mean. But did you ever watch the Netflix series they did?
No, because I don't like Neil Patrick Harris that much.
It's worth watching, honestly. If you enjoyed the books, it's a much more faithful adaptation. But I completely agree with you because Jim Carrey was perfect.
He actually was born to do roles like that, and it had such a special feeling, that film. Like, it had a real
charm to it. I would completely agree with you that that they should have done a sequel. Again, like, I think that ship has sailed now. But I didn't even dislike the idea that they'd put the first three books in. Like, those books aren't particularly long. I think you can fit three stories and, you know, three of them into one film. Yeah. It didn't not work. I think they could
have presented it different.
Yeah. I think they could have done another film that followed the next three books or the next two books, or, you know, I think they could have done it, and I think it would have been good. Yeah. That's a good one.
Another one, top of my head. I don't know where these are coming from. Talking of Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive fan of his, I've got to be honest. However, I know this film gets a lot of hate because it has elements of, you know, that's quite derogatory to a degree. But Sucker Punch. I liked Sucker Punch. I thought that was cool. Like, and not because of, you know, the girls and the way they're dressed.
No, although I know what you mean.
It looked pretty kick-ass, and there were some cool fight scenes in it. That seems like, surely you could do, quite easily, you could do another one.
You could, but I don't know. I mean, it's been years since I've seen it, but I'm not sure that there's necessarily another story in that specific kind of...
Is there not?
I think it ends quite definitively, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, it's been a while since I watched it. I just remember thinking, like, yeah, this is good fun.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I mean, I liked that film too. I thought it was the fancy action stuff, I thought. And there was that kind of...
Yeah, it was a bit different.
Yeah, it was bleak, though, if I remember rightly. It was very...
Yes, very dark.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm fresh out of sequels.
Well, that actually brings us to the end of this week's podcast. But wait, there's more.
There's more?
There's more, Jack. Before we come to our hilarious closing minutes, please do go and follow Corner of Film on all the social media at Corner of Film. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So, you know, just... do that right now, like right
all of them
now, every single one. If you've not got a Twitter account, go and make one, and we'll wait.
Nothing to do.
All the time in the world.
All the time.
But yeah, if you follow us there, it will keep you up to date with all the latest quality content at cornerofffilm.com, which is the website of Corner of Film. You can also follow me personally at Lord of the Grey on Twitter if you're interested. I don't post anything much worthwhile. I just talk nonsense. lastly, please do drop us a review or rating on your podcast platform of choice. And maybe make sure to subscribe while you're there. It just helps give us a boost. So,
and share it.
Yeah, share it with your friends.
If you like it, share it.
You know, just it'd be nice. Just nice. So, Jack, it's actually your turn for the quote this week. Did you bring one along?
I did. It's short and sweet. It's from Scary Movie. So, you
perfect.
Know.
Perfect. Yep.
But it's just actually so iconic, and it's Wazzup!
Makes me want a beer just hearing it. Is that, what does that say about, like, conditioning?
Christ, yeah, I know.
Wow. Well, we've been Jack and Niall. This has been the Corner of Film podcast, and you have been
going to the toilet all night long.
Cue the music. It will be playing. Once I've edited it in, it will be playing.
magic.
Maybe we should sing. I could sing. I'm not going to sing.